Hello. So you want to learn Linux. I'm going to assume that you're a systems administrator and you have a background in Windows systems, and you want to understand what this Linux thing is all about, how to navigate the command line, how to integrate Linux servers in environments with existing Windows servers, how to connect and mount shares from Windows systems over onto Linux, how to manage web servers from a command line versus IIS. And you really want to kind of have a hands-on experience. We're not going to talk anything about IIS. It's going to be solely focusing on Linux web administration with a LAMP stack for Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP, and then shares from Windows systems and so on and so forth. Before we get down into the demo, we're going to go through and walk through a little bit of a background of Linux and some need to knows. And then we will go right into a demo. So first off, starting point, you're going to want to go out to GitHub and pull all of my files. Everything that we're going to go through, including the deck, is already available on GitHub. If you go to github.com/jldean, that's DEEN/learn Linux, you'll have access to the PowerPoint presentation, the Word document to walk you through the project, a sites.conf example file. And then you'll even have a JSON template that'll deploy out your infrastructure in Azure, as well as a PowerShell script to use to push that JSON template. If you would like to learn more about Azure Cloud, open source software, Linux, PowerShell, and more, you can check out my blog at jessicadean.com. So why Linux? Why do we want to use it? Why do we care? First off, it's free. So it's one of the biggest reasons as to why, especially in startup businesses, when somebody's just trying to get started and learn web administration, they can simply and quickly deploy out a LAMP stack on Ubuntu at no cost. So they can get a web server going without worrying about licensing or anything else. Security, some might argue it's a stronger operating system than Windows, especially considering that most viruses are written for the Windows platform. Versatility, it can work on extremely old hardware. Think Raspberry Pi 1, 2, and 3. You'll even notice when you do the demo on your own, that when you deploy out your infrastructure using the JSON template I provide, the Linux VM is going to deploy out much faster than the Windows VM, just because the amount of resources needed and the amount of time it takes to spin one up is so much less than a Windows server. Software, the vast majority of Linux software is first off open source and therefore free. And then not only is there zero cost associated with it because it's open source and free, but you can usually, the source code's usually shared, so you can go ahead and modify it and adjust accordingly. You can also add more features if you do that as well, if you have a programming background. Everything runs off of software repositories, which we'll explain. So you can also install several applications from the command line in one line of quote unquote code. Speed, in many cases, Linux distributions are found to be faster than both Windows and Mac, just because there's no GUI, you're only using command line. So there's only text. There's a lot of different distributions. You'll hear the word Debian very often. You'll hear Ubuntu. Linux Mint, you won't hear as often. Fedora, you might do it here in an enterprise. Same thing with Red Hat Enterprise Linux. Those are both enterprise distributions. And since they're commercial, for a lot of their support and a lot of their updates, there are costs associated with that. But for the basic Debian, Ubuntu-based images, you're looking at pretty much a zero cost to get started. So in today's demo, we're going to go ahead and deploy an Ubuntu 16.04 image of Linux, and then also Windows Server 2012 R2. Next thing to know is desktop environments. If we were, so in today's setup and in the project that I provide for you, you're setting up an Ubuntu server. If you were setting up something that was a Linux desktop version, you would also have desktop environments. So you can kind of think of them like GUIs. XFCE, GNOME, KDE, another one that's not on here but is popular is LXDE, Unity, and then Cinnamon. Those are probably the most popular kind of desktop environments, and they just kind of change around the graphical interface and a few more tweaks. So it really it's something that's highly customizable on Linux, and it's something that's going to be completely dependent on the user preference. Since we're setting up Ubuntu Server, we won't be playing around with desktop environments, but I did want to do a high-level overview on that. Next is terminal. Everything we're going to do today is going to be from the terminal or from the command line. Terminal is really how you navigate everything in Linux. Some of you might already know that. So again, I'm just kind of doing a high level overview, quick and dirty basic things of Linux. Some basic commands for Linux. You can go ahead and check out this post I made on my blog where it's 15 Ubuntu Linux commands everyone should know. I do throw in two more additional commands at the end of the post so that you can kind of learn and play around and go out and explore. Man is a really popular one, especially when you're learning Linux. You can man every command, man sudo, man pwd, man mount, man all of the commands, and it'll give you the manual for the commands. So it'll explain to you what its purpose is, what the arguments you can use with it, switches, etc. LS, sudo. Sudo really elevates the command. So when you run a command with sudo, you're elevating as root. And then you have text editors. Nano, Vim, Emacs, Pico. Those are probably the most common ones. Pico is just an older version of Nano. And VI is an older version of Vim. It really comes down to personal preference, especially when people are starting out learning Linux. A lot of them really prefer Nano. From my background, I used to use Nano, and then my old job had me use Vim a lot. And as a result, now I'm just stuck on using Vim. Some more commands, move, cp. A lot of these commands are very similar as they are in PowerShell. One thing that is different in Linux is you have what's called crontab, and you can think of it kind of like scheduled tasks on Windows. So you can set up in your cron table scheduled tasks to run and fire off scripts at certain times of day. So this is helpful for web jobs. If you have to go out and pull something or run a script to update a database, you can set that in your cron tab. And it's usually common practice and recommended to set that in your root cron tab so that you're always elevating it as the highest level permissions, just as you would set something on Windows Server, a scheduled task to run as an administrator. Another really helpful command, especially when you're doing any kind of administration on a Linux system, is the history command with pipe. So if you use the history command and then you pipe it into grep and you use your search string, you can pull out a very short subset of commands that you've used when you otherwise would just type in the history command, and it's going to give you an output of all your commands you have ever typed. But if you're only looking for that one thing you ran 3 months ago and you remember it had one particular word in it, you can do history pipe grep and type that one particular word and see what comes back. So it's a really good, helpful search when you search previously run or executed tasks or commands. And then also, if you really want to learn command line, codeacademy.com does have a really great Learn the Command Line course, which will help you become more familiar and more comfortable with using CLI. One thing I also wanted to throw in here was Linux versus PowerShell commands to kind of show you popular Linux commands and then popular PowerShell commands. So tail-f gives you the running log. So as you're viewing a log file as it's being written to, tail-f on a Linux system will go ahead and help you see that log as everything gets appended to it. You can do the same thing in PowerShell with get-content. Go ahead and check this slide out on your own time and play around with it. Feel free to check out my blog, send me an email with other particular commands that would also be helpful, and I'd love to update this deck. Now, software repositories. I mentioned this in the beginning, that you can install a lot of software on Linux using one line of code because you can go out to a software repository. So it's kind of like, think of it like a giant app store before Apple had their app store. Linux had software repositories, which was pretty much the first app store. You can go out and get all these software packages from various repos. And each distribution of Linux is going to have its own repository, and therefore it's also going to have its own command to install software. On Debian-based systems, you're going to use sudo apt-get. On Red Hat or another system, you might use sudo yum. It really kind of depends. Today, all the commands we're going to go through and the project that I give you, the project document, all of that is based on Ubuntu 16.04. Each version of Linux is going to have different commands and different installation packages as well. Just like Windows 7, Windows 10, certain applications will only work on certain versions of Windows. One thing that's also important is from these repositories is you want to make sure that you update the package list and the packages. It's a list on your system of all the packages that are available from the software repository. So before you go ahead and install any software, it's common practice to run a sudo apt-get update command to update your package list, and then sudo apt-get upgrade, which will automatically install all the upgrade packages that are available from the repository onto your system. So now one more thing that's really important when you're considering building a web server is, first off, what are you looking at? What kind of websites are you deploying? So remember that Apache is free. Are you looking to do something probably physical or virtual? In this demo, obviously we're doing everything virtual. We're going to be using Azure. And then what kind of website are you deploying? If you're doing something that's PHP Python based, which one of the websites we're going to push out is a Python based application, HTML, you probably are going to be fine just with a regular LAMP stack. And again, LAMP stands for Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP, and it's a Linux based system. If you're doing IIS, then you're going to have a Windows based system. But if your main web server is Linux and that's going to be controlling the web traffic to your IIS through, say, like a proxy pass or a reverse proxy, we're going to walk through and kind of explain a little bit more about how that works as well. So again, as I did explain, that LAMP stack does stand for Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP, or some people do like also MariaDB for their database as opposed to MySQL. Today, we're just going to be setting up MySQL. Apache's been around since 1995. It's probably one of the most popular web servers out there. It serves These are old statistics, but it probably serves over 55% of all websites currently available online, and you can run it on any system. MySQL is open source. Again, it's free. And then PHP is just a server-side scripting language for web development, and you can code that again on any system. So to go ahead and get started and set up our LAMP server, like I said, we can go ahead and run one command and install out multiple applications all at once. Well, the cool thing is to set up our web server, we need a bunch of different files, but we can install all of that in one command, and then we can go ahead and restart our service for our web server again in one command. And I put out here sudo service Apache 2 restart or sudo systemctl restart Apache 2. Depending on the version of Linux, you can use either one. It really depends on your distribution and the version of Linux you're using. And then one more thing I wanted to explain a little bit about was vHost and reverse proxy, since I mentioned it earlier. vHost essentially is virtual hosting. You're hosting multiple domain names on a single server. So it's not quite like Docker or like a virtual, like a hypervisor or something. You're using a web server that's already configured, and you have a configuration file that's redirecting traffic to either folders on the system or ports on the system or IP addresses or DNS names. So you're just essentially, it's kind of like a traffic manager almost, but you're hosting multiple domain names through one particular server because that one server is acting as the resource holder, especially if you have multiple folders for web traffic. And say that you have site one and site two, and they're in site one and site two folders, and you can go to site1.com or site2.com. You can have both of that DNS refer to the same IP address, and then through a configuration file, you can route the traffic for each DNS name. And we're going to go through and demonstrate that to make it make a little bit more sense. And then a reverse proxy is going to appear to the client just like an ordinary web server. There's not going to be any additional configuration that's needed on the client end. So for example, if Linux was your front-facing web server, but on the back end, you had a Windows server for IIS websites, you don't have to make any configuration on that back-end client system on that Windows server. You would use the reverse proxy on a Linux system and just reroute traffic over to the IIS website away from the Linux web server. We'll touch on how to do that in our vHost demo, but we won't actually necessarily demonstrate that. You can play around with that in your own time from the project if you want to take it a little bit further. And if you want to learn more about proxies, I did include the link down there directly from Apache to learn a little bit more. So now we're going to go ahead and get right into our demo. So to do that, you're going to want to go ahead and clone the GitHub URL that I showed you in the beginning of the demo. I'm going to go ahead and show it to you again. But first, I'm going to assume that you have Git installed on your system. If you don't, now is going to be a good time to go out and install Git. So I'm going to go ahead and cd into my Git folder that I have on my local system, and I'm going to do a git clone https://github.com/jldean/learn-linux.git. And I would press enter. I actually already have this clone, so I'm not going to go ahead and press enter. I'm just going to go ahead and cd into my learn Linux directory. Now I can go ahead and update my Linux directory if I wanted to, the git pull to see if there were any updates, but I am already up to date. So I'm going to go ahead and clear, and I'm going to go ahead and list out the contents of what's in that directory. So you see that you have the learn Linux doc, which is the document where I walk you through everything in this project. Then we have a folder called deck, and the PowerPoint deck is in that folder. Examples folder, you have a sites.conf.example file in that folder. And then we have setup and templates. We're going to use this to go ahead and get our infrastructure deployed out. So now that we see the folder structure, I'm actually going to do all of this from Visual Studio Code because I already have the files up, and this way I can visually look at the setup files, the PowerShell files, and the JSON files, and then also execute it out from Visual Studio Code. So go ahead and pull this up. I'm currently in PowerShell in an integrated terminal. To do that from a Mac or a Linux system, or even from a Windows system, you'd press Control Backtick to get into your terminal. If you want to learn how to change the default integrated terminal to PowerShell for Mac or Linux, from your Bash instance, you would just simply type PowerShell if you have PowerShell Core installed. From Windows, you can actually go ahead and check out either one of my other videos that explains this, or you can check out my blog post where I actually tell you the settings file that you're going to go ahead and update. So we're going to go ahead and assume that you have PowerShell running and you know how to run a PowerShell script. So this is the PowerShell script that I'm running, where it's just a simple deployment script. I'm using positional parameters to capture the location, resource, and name right in plain text from the command line. I'm going to go ahead and check the session to see if I'm already logged into my Azure account. If I'm not logged in, it's going to prompt me to log in. After confirming that I'm logged in, it's going to go ahead and start the deployment. So it's first going to write the output telling me where, again, I am putting the VM. It's going to tell me the name of my resource group and the name of my deployment. The template file, the JSON file that we're using, is actually in our templates directory that we saw earlier. And then I'm only using two PowerShell commands. I'm using new Azure RM resource group to create a new resource group. And then I'm using new -Azure RM resource group deployment to start that deployment into that resource group. So if we take a quick look at the JSON template, I'm deploying everything out. I'm deploying two different virtual machines, and I'm deploying out all the network configurations, including the network security group that we're going to need for our web server infrastructure. The only things that we're going to have to type in is our username and password. So from PowerShell, we're going to go ahead and type setup, and then we're going to go ahead and type out deploy.ps1. Now I'm going to go ahead and push this into West US. I have not tried it in another data center. I've only tried this JSON template in West US. There may be issues with the size of the VM that I specified in other data centers. If there are, feel free to update the size of the VM accordingly. So I'm going to go ahead and call this Learn Linux Demo, and then I'm going to call the deployment Learn Linux Demo. So again, the order is our resource group name and our deployment name after we specify location. So I'm going to use the same name for both resource group name and deployment name. And then all I do is press Enter. I'm already signed in, so I don't have to worry about that. And it's confirmed back to me the location I'm putting my VM, the resource group name, and the deployment. So it captured that properly. And now I'm going to go ahead and give an admin username. So I'm going to go ahead and give it a name of demo, and then I'm going to assign a super secret password and press enter. It's now going to go out and create the infrastructure in Azure that we need to get started with this project. And a brief overview of the project is we're essentially going to set up a media server on a Windows server. So I'm going to use a free and quote-unquote open source kind of application called Plex to be able to manage your media. It's actually a really cool platform where you can use it to automatically index your music, your movies, your photos, home videos, etc. But one of the things that I noticed in the basic Plex media server application is that you don't really have a way to log traffic. So if you share out this media server with your content, with home videos, and you want to share it with other members of the family who live all over the world, they have accounts that they can access this particular media server that you set up, but there's no way to really track who's using it, at which time, from which IP address, from which browser. There's no real way to kind of gather data. You want data. You want to be able to have that knowledge, especially when you're a systems or web administrator and you're trying to figure out what traffic might be low, or you're having some throttling or bandwidth issues. You need to have certain information. So then comes in our Linux web server. We're going to set up a Linux web server to go ahead and manage that particular data from our Windows side. So we're going to have to create a SIF share to mount a Windows share onto our Linux system and pull that data into our Python-based web application. And then we'll go through and also show you how to set up a simple Apache website and then redirect that traffic through to, say, another port, because we're going to use our Python web-based application on the default port 80. So don't let any of this scare you. We're going to walk you through every step. And the Word document, again, that is in my GitHub, also walks you through everything. So we'll go ahead and check back as soon as this gets deployed out. It will take maybe about 20 minutes or so. It's deploying out a lot of infrastructure, and specifically the Windows server does take a long time. So don't be alarmed. We'll go ahead and check back after this finishes. Okay, so now we see that our deployment succeeded right here. It finished and it created our systems with our admin username and password. And we have the same username and password for both systems. That's what we typed in the beginning before the deployment actually started. So if we go over to our Azure subscription and go ahead and refresh resource groups, we see it, we have our Learn Linux demo. I do have another Learn Linux that I'll show you that's set up with custom DNS. If you have custom DNS or a DNS editor, you can go ahead and use that as well. But in the demo we're going to show in the video, we're just going to use the resource group we just created. So we're going to go to Learn Linux demo, and we'll see out everything that was deployed. So we're going to go ahead and see two VMs. We see our Linux VM and we see our Windows VM. We see a NIC for each VM. We see our network security group. We see we have public IP addresses. We have a virtual network and a storage account. So a lot of this is going to be really helpful for us to be able to manage and go through the demo. The first thing we're going to want to do is take a look at our Ubuntu VM, make sure that we see our public IP address attached to it. So we see that we have a public IP address right here, and then we're going to see the same thing for our Windows VM. Great, and so we see that right here. So now, in order to get started with the document, and by the way, the document I keep referring to is this document right here. I'm going to drag it over from my other monitor. We're going to go ahead and see that we have all our resources we need. You don't have to worry about opening up any of these ports. They've already been opened through the deployment in your network security group. So we're going to go ahead and scroll past that. We're really going to get started on page two. We're going to first have to set up, this was written at the time of this recording, it was written originally Windows 10. Our server that we deployed out is Windows Server 2012 R2. It's going to work the exact same way, and I'm going to update the document. So the document that you will have will be different than the document in this video. But we're going to first have to install the Plex Media Server application, which is free, onto our server. So in order to do that, I'm going to go ahead and grab the IP address, and then I'm going to go ahead and log in to the system. So I'm typing it in on a different screen right now. You can't see it, but I am doing it. And I'm going to go ahead and save that and then connect to it. And I'm going to drag that VM right over here. So I see that I'm logging into the virtual machine, again, running Windows Server 2012 R2. There's going to be one configuration change that I'm going to have to make so that I can go out onto the web from Windows Server. And once I make that change, I'll be able to go out and pull the download file. We're going to do very little configuration on Windows. A majority of the document takes place solely from command line, solely on Linux. And you're going to notice kind of the speed differences between the two, between the amount of time it takes to get everything going on Windows Server compared to the amount of time it takes to get things installed and downloaded and run from our Linux system. So we're going to go from within Server Manager. We're going to click on Local Server over here on the left. And we're going to go to IE Enhanced Security Configuration. We're going to go ahead and click that and turn it off for both administrators and users. Again, this is just a demo. This is just something we're doing so that we can learn how to set up Linux systems in a Windows environment. I'm not trying to preach on best practices on security. So we're going to go ahead and exit out of that, and we're going to go ahead and click on our Start menu and click on Internet Explorer. And then again, all of this information is in the document, but I'm going to go to plex.tv/downloads. So I'm going to go ahead and press OK. That's fine. I'm just going to type plex.tv/downloads. Press Enter. And I can make this a little bit bigger while I wait for this to go to the web page. And I'm going to go ahead and press the word download. I can go ahead and click right down here. I'm downloading it for Windows. And I'm going to go ahead and just run it. Now, this will require a restart. Just be aware. So now that this finished, and close out of Internet Explorer, I'm going to go ahead and install. And it's going to install the prerequisites needed for this particular server. So if we look at the steps after that, it will require a restart. There is a hint I included from the run command. If you were to type shutdown space /r/t:00, that'll shut it down immediately. The T stands for time, the R obviously stands for restart, and the 00 is shut down in this amount of time. So 00, I'm specifying shut down in this amount of seconds, 0 seconds, shut down now. That's really helpful when you're logged into things remotely and can't restart. Luckily, at the end of Plex install, it will prompt you if you want to restart, and we're going to go ahead and agree. Great, so I'm going to go ahead and click restart. And it's going to go ahead and restart the system. I'm going to give it a little bit of time to come up. Great, so it finished restarting and it's coming back up. Now I'm going to go to local app data, Plex Media Server, and hit backslash. Now, the folder I'm going to want to share out is logs, because our Linux web server is going to have to pull the logs to gather the data that we're going to need to be able to compile the information that we want in our web application. So I'm going to go ahead and right click, I'm going to hit properties, I'm going to hit our sharing tab, I'm going to go to advanced sharing, share this folder, permissions, I'm going to go ahead and allow it for everyone, again for the purpose of the demo, press OK, hit apply, OK, close, and exit out of this. Now, you will want to make sure that you have some sort of media on the server, so you can go download a video or something. It's just going to help us be able to kind of show how this kind of really interacts. So I'm going to go ahead and get a video and everything downloaded on the server, and then we'll start the demo on our Linux system. We don't have to worry about the video right now. You will notice when you start up Plex, if you're going to have terms of service, just go ahead and hit agree, and you'll sign in with a Plex account. If you don't have a Plex account, you can go ahead and sign up for one. It's free to sign up. You don't have to worry about anything. I created a free demo account, so I'm going to go ahead and sign in as plexdemo_JD. Type in my super secret password, press enter, and press got it. I don't have to worry about anything else. So when you first get everything set up, it's going to detect the friendly name. I'm just going to leave it the default name, which is called my Windows VM. Allow me to access my media outside my home. Yes, I want it to be accessible externally for the purpose of the demo. So I'm going to hit next. And now I can go ahead and add my library. So I'm going to go ahead and choose home videos. I'm going to go ahead and click add folder. I'm going to go ahead and just connect it to my C drive and my demo home folder. And I'm going to scroll right down here to the bottom and hit on videos. Go ahead and hit add and click add to library. So now any files that I put in my video folder, it's automatically going to transcode and be able to watch on the fly. I'm going to go ahead and leave music, photos, home videos. So I'm going to go ahead and hit next. And then you don't have to send anonymous data usage, so I'm going to go ahead and uncheck this. Remember, this is just the demo. It's something you're going to get rid of after. So I'm going to go ahead and hit done. And it's now set everything up. So you'll notice that I already have another Plex server attached to this user account, because I see two Plex servers. I see this one here. This is one I deployed out earlier from a demo. And then here's my one that I just set up. So there's not going to be anything on it. In your subscription, you'll probably only see one of those. This lock means that it's accessible remotely. And we can check that by going into our settings. See that it is fully accessible outside my network. Great. So now I know that I have the Windows part of things set up. I'm going to go ahead and go back over here to home, and I'm going to go ahead and get some media content on this particular server, just so we can be able to play around with it and pull information into our logs from our Linux side. Okay, so I went ahead and added some two dummy video files, just so that I had stuff on the Plex server, and I clicked and played both of them. They're 10 seconds long, so that way there was data that was generated to the logs. So you can see the videos I added here in the background. That shows under home videos. I already clicked and played them. So I'm going to go ahead and minimize this. Now we're going to need to go over to our Ubuntu VM, and we're going to need to grab the IP address for that, because now we're going to have to do the rest of our configuration. So we're going to grab the public IP address here, and we're going to go ahead and SSH demo at 40.118.174.9. Press enter. I'm going to go ahead and say yes. I'm going to type my super secret password. Great. Okay, so now I see that I'm in. I'm going to go ahead and clear. Again, common best practice, as I mentioned earlier, is that we want to do sudo apt-get update to update our package list. So that's going to go out and update everything. Now I'm going to go ahead and clear, and I'm going to run the same command but with upgrade. I see that I have a bunch of packages that need to be upgraded. So I'm going to go ahead and say yes. It's going to upgrade those. And then we're going to go ahead and take a look at our Word document and see what we have next to do. So we've configured the Windows side of things. Now the rest of our configuration is all going to be in Linux. So we already ran our sudo apt-get update and our upgrade. Now we're going to have to run this command, which is going to install our entire LAMP stack. That's the command that I showed you on our PowerPoint deck about 20 minutes ago or so, where we are going to install Apache, MySQL, PHP, all the modules that we're going to need, and get everything installed and configured. It's going to configure even MySQL. You'll see it pop up and prompt us for a password for that, for a root password. So I'm going to go ahead and copy this. As soon as this finishes in the background, we're going to go ahead and get our LAMP stack installed with one command. Okay. So now that this finished, I'm going to go ahead and clear the screen, and I'm going to paste in that command. Press enter, And it's going to install everything as well as dependencies that are needed by those packages. So I'm going to go ahead and hit Y and press Enter. And it's going out to the repositories and pulling everything. So here's where it's prompting us to set a root password for our MySQL database. So I'm going to go ahead and set a super secret password. Okay. So that part's all set up. Great. Now it's going to go through and finish the rest of the installation. Okay. So great. Now that this finished, we can go ahead and verify that our LAMP stack was successfully installed a few different ways. So first off, we can test and verify Apache by going to our IP address from any web browser. We don't have to do it on our Linux system because obviously we're just connected through an SSH session. So if I go ahead and copy this particular address, open a new tab here, I'm going to go ahead and press Enter. I see that Apache loads properly. That's great. So now I can go ahead and let's see what the document says to check the next step. So if we want to go ahead and verify MySQL, we can go ahead and I'll clear the screen and type sudo systemctl status MySQL. And I see that MySQL service is running. MySQL was installed. Great. Clear the screen. And now I'm just going to check to make sure PHP is installed. PHP-V. And I see that PHP was successfully installed. Great. So now we have our LAMP stack. But we don't want to actually touch anything with our LAMP stack just yet. We know that we have Apache running, and we know that it's actually pulling an index.html page. So we have a web server up. But now we want to go ahead and get into the meat and potatoes and connect this Linux instance over to our Windows instance, set up our SIF shares, and start importing data and doing really some of the fun stuff. So if we go ahead, we're going to go ahead and change directories. I'm going to leave this the terminal window side by side, and we'll walk through the document together. So now we're going to move on to the setup PyPlex for Python Plex web application from our Linux VM. So I'm going to change directory over to my opt folder, and then I'm going to go ahead and do a sudo git clone https://github.com/johnnywong16plexpy.git. We're going to go ahead and clone the PlexPy project. And now we're going to go ahead and change directories over into that project. I'm going to clear the screen, enter down. Now we're going to go ahead and run. If we do an ll command to go ahead and list all, we can see that we have a PlexPy.python script that's already executable. So I'm going to go ahead and do sudo python PlexPy.py. Actually, let's do it this way. And press enter. That's going to go ahead and start everything out. Now, this is a self-contained web application. This actually runs without the need of a LAMP stack. But I want to show you how you can have different web applications running on one Linux server and serving on multiple ports. And then we'll go ahead and modify our configuration file to direct traffic. So we see that this is now running, and it's running on port 8181. So if I go to the same IP address and do a colon 8181 and press enter, I now see my PlexPy application. So I can do the rest of the configuration, or the configuration to set up this Python-based application, from this particular screen. So I'll go ahead and click Next. Plex authentication, this is where you'll need to enter that username and password you created when you set up your Plex instance on your Windows system. So I'm going to go ahead and do Plex demo _JD, type in my super secret password, press authenticate. It's going to go out and fetch a token. Authentication is done. I'm going to press Next. Now for the Plex Media Server, I can go ahead and enter an IP or a host name. So it's going to pick up one that I already have attached to my subscription. You probably won't see one in here. So we'll go back over to our Azure portal. We're going to click on My WinNIC for Windows NIC, and we're going to grab the local IP address because this is all on the same virtual network. So we see that the Windows private IP address is 10.0.0.4. 10.0.0.0.4. And server found. So we'll go ahead and click verify after that. It found the server. So go ahead and press next. You can leave all of these as default and check. That's fine. Notifications, we can notify it. We don't have to. It's fine. Go ahead and press next. Now the final is the database import. And we'll just go ahead and press finish. We don't have any databases to import. There are a ton of Plex monitoring projects, and the cool thing about this particular Python application is you can import other files from it. So I see right down here immediately that it did actually pull in recently added. It connected over and is able to see that I added content. Great. Now, if I go over to libraries, I'm going to see that particular content under home videos. I have 2, music 0, photos 0. Now, if I go over to users, I see that Plex Demo, my user account, has never supposedly watched anything. I can't see any kind of IP information. I can't see the platform that I used. I don't have any data. And if I go to history and click on anything, there's nothing here, even though I watched those files, however short they are, earlier. The reason for that is it can't access the log from the Windows server. There's no way for this Linux server to know what happened on the Windows side because it has no access to the logs, where Plex, the movie app running on the Windows, or the media app running on the Windows server, stores everything. So now we're going to have to create a SIF share on our Linux system to access that logs file that we shared out earlier on Windows. So if I go over here to my settings file, or to my settings button, I'm going to go ahead and click on Plex Media Server about halfway down the page on the left-hand side, and I'm going to scroll down, and I see Plex Logs. Here's where I'm going to go ahead and enter a log folder. But before I can do that, I have to set up the mount. So I'm going to go back over here to my terminal, and I'm going to go back over to the Word document, and I'm going to go ahead and start a new terminal session because I don't want to leave this Python application script I don't want to shut this down. I need this running because it's serving the web application. To make it run permanently in the background, we can set it up as a service. And I do have the daemon instructions right here for us to do that. We'll do that in a little bit. The first thing I want to do is get the SIF share mounted. So if I go over here, this setup Plex on Linux VM to connect to Windows Plex, we kind of already did part of that. Now we're on this particular step to allow logging. So this is where we get into our SIF share. So first off, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to SSH back over into that system. So SSH demo at 40.118.174.9. Great. So now that I'm connected here, I'm going to go ahead and do sudo apt-get install sifs-utils. And I can go ahead and press tab to autocomplete if something were to already match that name. So if I press enter, I'm going to find out that it's actually already installed on our system here. That's great. So I'll go ahead and clear out the screen. And now there's going to be 2 commands I'm going to run to prevent the SIFS application from hanging during shutdown, if in case there's a mount that it has trouble unmounting. So I'm going to go ahead and run sudo update -rc.d-f umount nfs.sh remove, and then I'm going to go ahead and do sudo update -rc.d umount nfs.sh stop 15 space 0 space 6 space period enter. We can go ahead and ignore that warning. I'm going to go ahead and clear the screen. Okay, so now I'm going to go ahead and create an SMB credentials file under my root folder. So this is a folder that belongs to root. It's the root's home folder. And one thing I didn't specify is what the period before a file name means in Linux. And that means that it's a hidden folder. So if I do LL right now, I see that I have a hidden folder or file. So I see that I have a few hidden folders and files under my demo home directory. Well, to do this next part, I'm going to go ahead and actually elevate as root so that I can go ahead and take ownership of the file after I create it. I just want to make this next part really clean, because this is where I'm going to hide the credentials for my Windows system so that I can use that credentials file for my SIFS mount. So if I type sudo su and press enter, I'm now elevated and I'm no longer logged in as the demo user. I'm now logged in as root. And if I cd over into a tilde, I'm actually cding over into my home directory. So if I do pwd, I now see my /root. Great. That's where I want to be. So if I do sudo vim period smb credentials and press enter, I'm now going to be able to create this file. So if I go ahead and type in username equals my username for my Windows system and password for my Windows system. I told you it was super secret, and I'm going to go ahead and press escape. I'm going to go ahead and save it. So now I've created the file. So if I do an LL, I'm able to see the SMB credentials file. But now I want to make sure that I change the permissions of it. So I'm going to do sudo chown root dot SMB credentials and press enter. Clear the screen. Scroll down to see the next command. Now we're going to also modify it's executable permissions. So we're going to go ahead and do sudo chmod600.smb credentials and press enter. Great. So now we have our credentials file that we can use for our mount. The next thing we have to do, I'm going to go ahead and change users back over to the demo account, sudo su demo. Now I'm specifying which account I want to change to. And I'm going to clear and cd back over into just my demo home directory. So if I go ahead and now make a directory in opt, I'm actually going to have to make that as sudo. So I'm going to go ahead and do sudo make directory forward slash opt plex py forward slash media server. That's where I'm going to call, I'm making a mount point. This is where the files from my Windows server are going to live locally on my Linux server so that I have a Linux file structure, directory structure name. So I'm going to go ahead and press enter. That made that directory. So if I go ahead and cd over into opt plex py and press enter and do an ll command, I now see that media server folder right here. Great. So I'm going to go ahead and clear. Now I'm going to go ahead. Here's where I'm actually going to make the mount. I'm going to go ahead and do sudo vim etc fstab. All your mount points in Linux happen in your fstab command configuration file. So I'm going to go ahead and press enter. And I'm going to go ahead and do forward slash the local IP address of my Windows system, which I know is 10.0.0.4 forward slash logs. That's the name of the folder that we obviously shared out earlier. Space. Now I'm going to specify the folder that I created on my Linux system, which is the destination folder for the Linux mount. So I'm going to press opt plex py forward slash media server. Specify sifs. Credentials is going to be in our root forward slash smb credentials. And then I'm going to go ahead and press escape, hit WQ. And then I'm going to go ahead and do a sudo mount dash a dash v to mount everything in the fstab file. And dash v is going to go ahead and enable verbose mode. So I'm able to see that this was successfully mounted. Opt plex py successfully mounted. It went ahead and did a sifs mount based on this IP address using this particular UNC folder directory. And this, the SMB file with the user credentials and password, it did block out in plain text here just as the repeat or confirmation, confirming it back to me. So now I can go ahead and clear. And if I were to cd over into the media server directory and do an ls, now I see all of my logs that are on the Windows system. Great, this is exactly what we want. So now I'm going to go ahead and have to put that. Remember, now I'm going back over into the Python Plex app where I'm using the IP address of the Linux server. I'm going to go ahead and have to enter that into the logs folder. So I set that at opt plex py forward slash media server. And I'm going to go ahead and press save. So now if I go over here, I'm able to see the information that I wasn't before. The last seen, the last known IP, the platform they were on, the last player. This could take up to 5 minutes for it to import the data, so don't be alarmed, that's normal. But if we go back over to homepage, now we're able to see actual statistics. I can see how many times movies were played, which user watched it, which platform they used, because this is pulling everything from that log file. So again, like it's going to update this automatically. It's going to show me the browser. If I go to history, I can go ahead and see even the history in a running log. If I go to graphs, it's going to sometimes even draw, not sometimes, it's if I go to graphs, it's going to even draw graphs and give me data and information that I want there. And it's going to show me anything that's synced. So this is great. I know that that's now connected and it's able to import that log. I can even test that by if I do an ll command and find the Plex server log. I can go ahead and tail the end of that, and I can watch it as it writes. So I know that I'm pulling a running log from my Linux system of my Windows SIFS share. So I can go ahead and press Control C to cancel out of that and clear out of that. Now I have everything kind of set up. I'm able to talk from my Linux system over to my Windows system. I have a web server running. I have a media server application running on the Windows side. I have things really playing well in this mixed environment. But one thing that I noticed, and this is where we're going to get into our virtual hosts or our vhost file, is that this is currently running on port 8181. If this were just a regular DNS name, say mymediaserver.com, I wouldn't want to have end users or myself have to type in 81 all the time, 8181. So to do that, we're going to fix that, we're actually going to go ahead and edit our virtual hosts file and change this. So if I cd over into my etc apache2 directory, to make the modification to where we can go ahead and listen to traffic from our 8181 particular website and have that now live at root, we're going to go and create a sites.com file. And I included an example of this in GitHub. So if we go ahead and take a look at what's in here, we see that we have a few different folders. We really care about going to our sites available folder. So we're going to go ahead and CD into sites available and press enter. And we're going to go ahead and do sudo vim sites.conf. So I'm going to go ahead and copy and paste everything from our from the example file. I'm going to go ahead and paste this in. And you'll notice that I have two different examples in here. One references the document root where Apache lives, which is var, www, HTML. Apache actually lives in the etc folder, but our website content is going to live in var, www, HTML. So if we go actually again back, we can see this. If we go back to our Apache landing page, it explains that our index.html lives under the var, www, HTML, and then we have the configuration layout for Apache in etc. So we can put other web applications in this folder and redirect that through DNS. That's what I explained earlier. We're not going to play with custom DNS in this demo just because it's a little bit out of scope. If you want to play around with it, go for it. That's why I included both examples. But what we are going to do is I'm going to go ahead and change the server name here to the IP address we're using so that we can reroute that traffic and get rid of the tailing 8181. So if I go ahead and back out of this and type in 40.118.174.9. And I'm going to go ahead and press escape so that I can go ahead and save the file. Now, let's just take a look at this here. We're using ProxyPass and ProxyPass reverse to go ahead and take our HTTP localhost, which is just the obviously localhost IP address, port 8181. And we're going to go ahead and redirect that right to root. So then that way, when you just go to this particular IP address, we're now going to see it at root. If we had a DNS name pointing to that IP address, we could just use that. If we had a different IP address we could use, we could also, that was sitting on our network, we could go ahead and redirect that down here and then be able to view our Apache instance and our Python web application at the same time. So I'm going to go ahead and save this. And I'm going to go ahead and do a sudo service. Actually, before that. So I'm going to go ahead and save that. And then I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to have to enable that. So if I do sudo a2n site, and then I'm going to do sites.conf, it's going to go ahead and enable that. Now it tells me that I have to reload the service for that to refresh. So I'm going to do sudo service apache 2 reload. Great. Now there's one other thing that I'm going to have to do to make that work, and that's going to be to run the modules to enable ProxyPass and proxy rewrite. So you would do sudo a2n mod proxy HTTP and rewrite. Now remember, you can run everything on one line in Linux. So I'll press enter. I already have it enabled in here, but if you didn't, that's the command that you would do. And then you're going to go ahead and again, you would want to reload and restart Apache. So we'll go ahead and do that just for sanity's sake. So we'll go ahead and do sudo systemctl restart Apache 2. And you can do sudo service restart or sudo systemctl. It's going to work the same on this version of Ubuntu. So we'll go ahead and clear. And now if I refresh this page, I now see the Python web application because I've used a virtual host to redirect that traffic. Again, I'm kind of using it as a traffic manager. Now, to give you an example, if I scroll back over here to my Learn Linux, I'll show you without actually editing and doing the demo itself, but I'll show you how the custom DNS can work. Okay, so if I go to my 1604 Linux, I see that I have this public IP address. And I'm going to go ahead and clear this. Okay, so if I go over to a VM that I have in my Learn Linux, I see that I have my Linux machine and I have a public IP address. I also have a custom DNS name already attached to that public IP address. So if I ping 1604demo.jessicadean.com, which is included in the site's example, I can see this particular IP address, 138.91.245.123. Now let's see what happens if I go to that actual IP address. I'm going to see the Apache default page, but let's see what happens if I go to the 1604 demo.jessicadean.com. I see the Python app. I'm using the sites.com file to, again, redirect traffic. Now, if I go to the 1604 PHP address that was included in the sites.conf address, and then backspace out of home, because there is no directory under there called home, I now see that I have the Apache 2. I have, and again, both of those IP addresses, if I cancel out of this and then do a ping 1604php.jessicadean.com, both of them are the same exact IP address, different DNS name, pointing to two different applications on the system. That's the purpose, really, of a virtual host file. Yes, you can use it to get rid of the trailing ports or trailing folders if you are redirecting content, but you can really use it to route multiple websites on one web server. So that kind of wraps everything up. Again, go out to my GitHub, download the project files, get started, deploy out the infrastructure, play around with it. Let me know what you think. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at jessica.dean, D-E-E-N, at microsoft.com, or you can go ahead and reach out to me on my blog at jessicadean.com. I'd love to hear from you. Don't forget to comment, rate, subscribe, and have a great day.